Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riedel 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
Moin, Glück auf, and a very warm welcome to episode 53 of the German Football Podcast. As you probably guessed by this point, we've gone for a bit of a change-up this week. I'm in the hot seat. While some things change, other things stay the same, and that is, of course, my co-host, Colin. Colin, how are you doing? Have you been able to get over the loss in the German Football Podcast Scottish Cup derby at the weekend?
I've got over it because it definitely wasn't a surprise. I've just come to expect games like that when it comes to air this season. I pretty much got over it as soon as it finished.
Uh-huh. Friend of the podcast, Andrew, of course, was there with St Mirren celebrating at Somerset Park. So congratulations to him. And this week's episode is about VfL Bochum. And we thought we'd get a special guest on, Elliot Turnbull, who I'll play up his role a bit more. We'll go for Director of International Media at VfL Bochum. Elliot, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. Glück auf. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much.
I love that title. That is lovely, by the way.
Well, it's what I thought when I was at HSV. There's no one above you who's doing international media. So we'll go for the highest title possible. So the first part of the podcast is just about you and how you got to know Bochum. So if you want to sort of introduce yourself a bit, where you grew up and sort of where your love of German football came from.
Yeah, sure. So grew up in Bolton, big Bolton Wanderers fan. Unfortunately born 10 years too late for their success in Europe. You know, you look back at Bayern Munich and Atletico Madrid, been some very good days, but yeah, enjoyed the relegation down to League Two and then back up. Always been a huge football fan and mainly introduced to German football at school. Always enjoyed learning languages, one of the few things that I was okay at. So chose German and I had a brilliant teacher called Herr Brace, who had the really good idea in hindsight to give every student a German Bundesliga team. So sort of going around the class and friends getting Bayern Munich and so on. I got FC St. Pauli, who I think is going to go back like 2000. The last time in the Bundesliga quite recently, so maybe 2010 or so.
Yeah.
Got St. Pauli. He gave loads of stickers, so put that on. Ivan Klasnic, actually played, former Bolton striker, he played for them, so I was happy to have that weird mutual link. We used to look at the Bundesliga table every Friday, and that really sparked my interest in the league. Then I'd go home, don't know if you remember the ITV4 highlight show, that was brilliant, and I'd religiously watch that. And yeah, ever since then, I just became addicted with the league, and yeah, every decision from then on was really football-centric in mind, hoping to sort of move out to Germany one day, and if I could be involved in football in any way, shape or form, then that would be a huge bonus for me.
Nice. And were you interested in journalism at that point as well? Did you sort of have your own blog or write for the school newspaper or anything like that at that point?
Yeah. So when I was 14, started writing some horrific match reports for a Bolton Wanderers blog called The Line of Vienna Suite. So yeah, they did a podcast. So used to do that, match reports whatsoever. And I always knew that I wanted to do journalism and studying language. So A-level, I was English, German, and then Spanish as well. So to really, I just love La Liga, love Bundesliga, knew that I wanted to do it.
Nice. And did your love of St. Pauli fade over time, or how did you end up coming to?
I wouldn't say it faded. Huge respect for the club. I was really happy. Supporting Bolton, I've always loved an underdog team and find it incredibly boring supporting a commercially successful and successful on the pitch football club. So yeah, I used to go home, YouTube clips. Their fans are incredible. And it was amazing when I was out in Bochum. I got to go to the stadium in the press pit and, yeah, just sort of sent a photo back to my school of my old German book and where I was. And the teacher got back in touch and it was really sweet. And I've always had a soft spot for them. And I'm so happy to see them flying and especially knocking out Dortmund in the cup. I mean, that was very sweet. And I sort of refound my love for them then. But yeah, it was a weird one how I ended up in Bochum slightly. I knew on my year abroad that I wanted to work for a football team, doing whatever. I'd just come from writing for a football blog in Malaga. So I was like, I'm loving journalism. I want to do more. So I sent out emails to every Bundesliga team going. And obviously with your episode a few weeks ago, found out quite a few of them are run by agencies and whatsoever. So that was rejection, rejection, rejection. I actually had a really nice rejection from St. Pauli. They were very, very sweet. And Bundesliga, second division, every club sort of got back and said, no, we're okay. Apart from VfL, who didn't say yes, but they didn't say no. They were, maybe you could be on something, we'll see. So, yeah, to my mum's horror, I was like, yep, Bochum, that's what I'm going to do. So I got myself enrolled at the university, booked flights. She's saying, like, what are you doing? Working, studying? I was like, well, technically studying, but I'm hoping a job will come. And then flew out there, met my bosses who were incredible and have been so supportive. And I mean, my love for them and the club has only grown and grown. And yeah, we just sit down. I gave them quite a small pitch, explained how they're potentially to people abroad quite an attractive club, how, you know, it's a proper football stadium, proper fans. There is a market if there's some English supporters. And I mean, way before me, we've had loads of fans from Leicester traveling across. They've got a huge friendship there. So I'd seen this on Facebook and I just wanted to tap into it. And yeah, thankfully they said yes, set up an account. And basically ever since, they've been very liberal letting me run it. And I'd hope put the club in a good light and shine the work that happens there, because I do hope that people have a greater respect for the club having seen the posts, and hopefully more fans will come when they can, when lockdown restrictions ease in Germany.
Yeah, that must have been a pretty nerve-wracking experience trying to do almost a business pitch in German just after having been in Spain for 6 months.
Yeah, and yeah, when you're fresh, I don't know about you, but my German, I'd done it for my degree at uni, and I'm confident with it, but for some reason, as soon as you go in there, you just start forgetting how to speak and everything. But yeah, I'd sort of written everything down in a nice little book. And I think I also mentioned we had Lee Chung-yong playing for us, who I don't know if you heard of him, but
yeah,
played for Bolton Wanderers. He's a
Crystal Palace player as well,
shame it didn't work out at Palace, but yeah, favourite game I've ever been to, Bolton 2, Birmingham 3, FA Cup quarterfinal. He scored in the 90th minute and like a packed out St. Andrews. And I've loved him ever since. So he was at the club and I was like, right, we've got this player. You know, some people know from abroad, we could be on something. So yeah, they immediately got interviews set up and press pass sorted. And I was sat in the press box eating their best Currywurst and drinking Fiege, which is a beautiful beer. And yeah, genuinely couldn't have been happier to have sort of fluked a quite enjoyable gig for the other half of the year, and obviously now remotely.
And what did your university think when you said, oh, I'm not sure, I might be studying, I might have a job here?
They weren't very happy initially. they were happy because I'd enrolled at the university, but I didn't go to any of the lectures. I lived there, which was a perfect base for meeting people and getting involved in the football team there. And like social side, that was brilliant. That was with people, because it's, I mean, you could do a whole episode on year abroad, but it can be quite a lonely thing moving out to a city where you don't know anyone. So I was happy that I was like living in halls and near people. But yeah, I think they just trusted me to sort it out, but I'd ticked the box that I needed to enrolling at the university. Then it's just up to you, because none of the year abroad counts, which was the beautiful part of it. So they were happy for me never to go and forge my own way, which thankfully I did, and really happy how it worked out.
And which university was it? Because I think that's something I was really surprised of when I started in Germany as well, is that when you go to university, especially in that Nordrhein-Westfalen, you get a free, as a student, you get a free travel ticket as well. So you can travel in the whole sort of Bundesland for free as well. Yeah, so which university was it you were at?
Ruhr Universität.
Okay.
Universität. Uni in the UK was Durham, and then they were really chill heading out there. And yeah, as you mentioned, that that train ticket is incredible, because I hadn't realized how large a state that was and how many beautiful places there were. So I mean, my weekends were always booked up with football, but Monday to Friday, I did the occasional translation for VfL, but it gave me so much time to travel, and took up the offer, really. And you could go right out to Aachen and easily pop into the Netherlands. And it's incredible how it's free. And obviously not free. You pay, I think it's about €350 for like your general contribution. But with that, you get your tuition, you get this incredible train ticket, which I don't know what equivalent to the travels that I did, but I could nip to Cologne for a night out easily. We're talking for the podcast, Dusseldorf, got a beautiful Altstadt with incredible beer. To say I miss it is an understatement, and I'm jealous of you being out there at the moment. And as soon as COVID calms down a bit, I'm out there. I mean, it's just the best time, and I would encourage anyone to go and do a year abroad and go live in Germany. It's beautiful.
Having regularly got the train from Hamburg to Cologne, I'm not sure I'd necessarily class Nordrhein-Westfalen as beautiful in some areas.
That is really horrible.
Okay.
But that's what I mean, yeah. The people are beautiful.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
But also, suburbs of Dusseldorf as well. You've got, I forgot the name, but it'll come to me later. It's beautiful places down by the Rhine. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And one question that I got a lot when I was at HSV was, what do you actually do? Because I think people assume that as a sort of international social media manager, you just sit on Twitter all day, thinking about a few funny tweets. Well, firstly, what did you do on your year abroad? We'll start with that one.
Yeah, so responsibilities were to run the Twitter account. So you go down to training, free reign to take your own photos, but to be honest with you, the club photographer was a lot more talented than me. So just use his photos, come up with captions whatsoever. Anyone who got in contact with any ticket inquiries who were English, I'd deal with or put them through to the right person, because we had quite a few emailing and DMing us who we used to reply more than we do now. And then match days, run the Twitter account. So translate throughout the week. You'll have obviously match report, interviews, preview of the opposition, just those basic ones like that, really. It sort of varies each club you're at, how content heavy you are. But my work wasn't as time consuming at VfL, because I'm not and wasn't the person creating the media. I'm just sharing and translating, which is a lot easier. The real effort goes into the videos that they make to promote games. And I mean, still make all the graphics, did that then, and I do that now. But probably not the most time consuming role when I was there, which allowed me to travel and play for teams and explore different bits, which was nice.
And did you have social media experience beforehand, or were you sort of thrown in at the deep end? Because also, how were your colleagues in sort of helping you right at the start?
At the company I was with in Spain, I had experience managing their accounts, but never, I say experience managing, I just shared the content we'd done. And for this company, BSoccer, it's just literally churn out articles, share them on Facebook, get some traction, more money, more ad revenue, which is good. I'd never had anyone, and still really haven't had anyone, sort of sit down and tell me how to successfully grow a Twitter account and what to do. And I don't know if it's a conscious effort from me or not to, but we've always, well, fair, I've always copied the style of the main account, but also it is free reign to do what you want. I've always chosen authentic, I'll say like not cringy, I can't think of a better word to describe it, but quite factual and potentially boring sometimes, but not your clickbait, I'm going to degrade the club and, you know, poke fun at other admins and just do anything for retweets and likes. We've always been a bit more of a, here's what's going on. We'll do the occasional funny tweet now and then, but I don't know, you see some accounts that are always fishing for likes and comments, whereas that was never really prioritized. And perhaps I thought 3 years on or so, we would have a few more followers, but I think they are growing naturally and what we're doing is working. But it is something you've got to consider with the content you do. I don't know how you felt about that, how as far sort of, it's a really fine line between not annoying your hardcore fans and also growing.
Yeah, I think that's sort of, because on the podcast 2 weeks ago, there was a discussion with, about sort of German social media, obviously, with George and Roy being part of it. And they were sort of talking a lot more about the amount of impressions and clicks that that a piece gets or a post gets, whereas I was sort of more towards your point of view, that you much more, at least from my point of view, you much rather give the fans an authentic view of what the club's actually like and what real fans think about the club, and not necessarily catering to those fans or those people on Twitter who might give you a retweet or a like for a funny tweet, but realistically they're not going to follow the club and their results after that. So it's much more interesting to tell the sort of story behind the club, and especially with sort of historic clubs like Bochum and HSV, you've got an advantage there because they have got such a history that you can build on, and so you don't sort of necessarily have to resort to those kind of tweets to get some kind of interaction.
Yeah, and I think long term it does work, because followers wise we're about 3,500 or so, but we don't, I thought we'd have more and I would like more, but then the engagement we get on that, we do have a very tight-knit group who followers who thick and thin and engage with everything. But when we got promoted, I rarely make videos and stuff myself, but just sort of felt compelled to do like a little video explaining who Fowerfell are for those who didn't know, is sort of introducing us to the Bundesliga. I spent a couple of weeks working on it and really loved it. And I hope you could, I don't know if you've seen the video, but you could tell from that I absolutely love the club and the city to bits. And that interactions wise was so successful. And my German bosses never thought it would be anywhere near as successful, but that's the first time they'd ever really picked up on, oh, this is interactions done amazing. They were so much happier for me to convey a feeling for the club. And as you say, actually how the stadium is, what the people are like, how people in Bochum tick, that's so much more important than clicks and stuff. And yeah, hopefully people saw that and wanted to come.
And so perhaps there might be a few people listening who are sort of starting social media accounts for lower league football clubs and that kind of thing. Have you got any tips for them if they are starting from scratch on how to sort of gain a few followers, or yeah, how to gain a bit of traction?
Yeah, I think the main thing is probably consistency. You could have studied the algorithm more than me, but I know if there's ever a week or so where I've put less stuff out, I think definitely it doesn't do as well. So keep posting regularly. But I think just it's so hard, and I've done it. I did it for my university football team. I used to do all the live tweets and stuff, and it was hard at the start when no one followed it. But then I sort of told all the parents, and we got everyone involved, and on the bus back from an away game, everyone would sit, and because I was a subkeeper for the ones in my second year, so wasn't playing, but it meant I got to do loads of tweet, which probably led me to doing Bochum. So everyone would sit on the bus and be like, what, can't believe you've written that term, well, that's disgusting. And I think like finding your community is the most important thing you can do. So obviously post regularly, but if you can find even like five supporters who absolutely love everything and do what you're doing, keep on cracking at that. And I'm sure if you wanted to move on to bigger clubs, they'll see that and proof of that you're actually passionate and enjoy it, and it will pay dividends.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because sort of my first experience in social media were for Lancaster Uni hockey team as well. And I'd sort of, because that was something I really wanted to do, was doing the website and match reports and trying to give a funny twist and that kind of thing. And I think, like you say, people realize when you do actually put a lot of effort into it, and they appreciate that, and they share it with their parents, especially when you're at you're at uni, or maybe if you're working for a sort of lower league football club, maybe, I don't know, some of the players are sharing it with their families and that kind of thing. So you
I'd get tweets from parents. So the goalkeeper above me, I'd always be quite tongue in cheek, because obviously I'm loving tweeting, but I wanted to play, so I did like a semi-critical tweet of him, and then I'd have his dad in the DMs like, "Oi, like, be careful what you think about my son." But it was all really good nature, and I mean, I'm sure with the hockey club you experience the same thing. When you don't do those tweets and when you don't do it, people genuinely miss it, and they'll sort of joke at the start and be like, "Hey," sort of sitting on the bench and tweeting, but the clubs need it. And then, especially for football, when it came to sponsorship, we got more from the uni because we had a better profile than others online, and sponsors knew that genuinely on a match day, their stuff will be seen on the pitch and also social media, because all the parents and alumni get involved. So it's really fun to do.
Yeah, and anything feels a lot easier. I mean, like when I used to play hockey, I'd like run off when I was subbed off and get my phone out and make a few notes for the match report, which is probably when then working at the Volkswagen Stadion compared to that seems quite
favorite easy. Things non-league, whenever like there's a break in the Twitter feed and it's like, "Oh, sorry, like an injury and this person had to come on and we couldn't tweet," or there's always brilliant like non-league tweets.
Yeah. So then the last question I had on this from this section was, so you worked for Bochum when you were on your year abroad, and then you started work for them again at the start of this season, I think I'm right in saying. What's it like to work for them remotely compared to working for them when you were actually in Bochum?
Obviously worse. I miss not being in the stadium and seeing my colleagues and going to training, and even your nice little chats with the players who get to know you a bit. I miss that. However, it's pretty much the same, really, just in contact with them every day on WhatsApp, notifications on my phone. Whenever they do anything, I do it. Got a nice little translation team for the English article. So we've got a group of volunteers out there who are so passionate for the club and want to get involved. So they'll often translate the match reports, sometimes match previews. So just sort of manage what they're doing, make sure they're doing quick translations, proofreading them, uploading it. It's not too dissimilar. And in a way, it's sometimes easier being, I mean, I don't know about you, but some stadiums you go to and there's the Wi-Fi. I mean, probably less so now in lockdown, but I had one at Bielefeld where we couldn't get the Wi-Fi to work. So we're doing it on 3G and it was freezing. And I mean, it's brilliant being at the game, but I sort of tweeting from home, it's nice and warm and cozy, but you can't replicate the atmosphere and being there in the person. And I don't know if you've ever, when mentioned earlier that some games, because of COVID restrictions, you had to watch from home. It's you can definitely tell in the match tweets you do, when you're not there, they're worse. There's just something, I mean, I'm terrible for getting excited and tweeting in caps, but I quite enjoy that now. But yeah, just at the stadium, when you're there, I just feel like you choose better words and you can find, you describe the moment a lot better than at home.
Yeah, I think that's true. I didn't actually realize that. So there's a team of English volunteers who work for Bochum. So it's not just you doing it. There's some who do sort of the match reports and then you sort of overseeing it and doing the social media.
So I just mainly social media. And I mean, I'd say I do 7 out of 10 articles because we have quite a lot going on throughout the day. But we've had this group of volunteers who have been translating for the club for the past 10 years or so. Brilliant lads who, just absolutely love it. We had the option at the start of the year to, because I came on the first time they'd paid someone to do the role. So it was an option to keep them on or not, but I decided that they clearly enjoy doing it. They're very passionate for the club. So it was obviously an easy decision to keep them. And you'll find it with the Germans. They speak better English than I do, to be honest with you. Grammatically, the amount of times I had, I was corrected once with my English by a German. So there's very good quality of translation there.
And as we were talking about before the podcast started as well, their knowledge of the royal family is better than us as well. So they've got a few things up on us there. I'd like to apologise.
I was going to say really quickly on that, they're brilliant. Just if ever obviously I know the club and I know the city, but if a tweet or anything's ever like not the wrong tone, but they know who all the legends are and the do's and the don'ts. And it's often quite good sometimes listening to their guidance, because there's nothing worse than having an admin sort of tweeting false things about a club and not doing legends or any important figures in the club disservice. So if there's ever an old legend's birthday who's past my time, they will be instantly translate it. I'll get it on Twitter because they want people to know about them. And I love that about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that kind of links into maybe what we're saying before about social media, because you want those kind of legends' birthdays being on the social media, because that's what makes the club what it is and sort of gives it that special feeling. Whereas if you're sort of, I feel like a lot of Bundesliga social media, like you say, people don't realize that a lot of the clubs are done by actually one agency who controls a lot of clubs. And
with sometimes like, people who don't know the legal where exactly, they're representing.
That was sort of where I was going. Yeah, they don't sort of know the ins and outs of the club and what makes it special. And you could take the tweet that they've put out on one club's account and just put it to another Bundesliga account. There's nothing sort of special about it. But anyway, before I go on a rant, we'll end that there. I just wanted to say sorry to Colin, because I've been focusing on Elliot a lot. But if I could bring you in now, because you've had a bit of experience with journalism as well, because I think you wrote for, was it Get German Football News? And obviously you've written two articles now for Halbfia, one in the upcoming issue, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of a hobby, Get German Football News. Technically, I mean, I still write for them, and just really the last few months been so busy with work and other things going on, not really had the time to do it. Managed a couple of Halbfia articles. I would say, like, the Get German Football News really came out of... So I graduated from uni summer of 2018. It took quite a while to get a job. I was just sort of looking for jobs, still working my part-time job from uni at Morrison's, which didn't really fill the week with excitement. So just as something to do as a hobby, saw German Football News advertising for new writers. So I started doing that. That was about summer 2019, early summer, something I really enjoyed. And just in the moment when I was struggling to get a job, I sort of thought maybe this would have been the career for me. Almost felt like a bit too late to find that out, though, because I'd just done a four-year degree in history and politics, and I was struggling to find a sort of set career for that, because it's not really, it's sort of like one of these degrees where so much is open to you, but not a specific thing. So I'd considered maybe I could do a postgrad in sports journalism or something, how possible that would be for me to get in and make a career of it. Not long after that, I managed to find the job that I'm currently am, which I'll not disclose. Is it for reasons I mentioned a couple weeks ago, pretty much just in case I put my foot in my mouth. I don't want to get me and Kyle Walsh in trouble. but I think just since I've sort of got like a good job now and everything, and I sort of do like football writing and podcasting on the side, I sort of realised that it probably wouldn't have been the career for me. I think it's just, I know, like, from speaking to you, Robert, I think we're sort of the same frame of mind, that when it's part of your life in terms of a career, you maybe stop enjoying it so much as a hobby. Because it's always really been a massive part of my life in terms of a hobby. Like, I've been going to see my local team AR for that's over 20 years now. And it's just something you look forward to at the end of the week when you're done with work and everything like that. And when the lines are blurred between work and that, I feel like I would enjoy it less. So I think I'm quite happy with the balance now. When I've got the time, I can sort of spend time on football. German football is a passion in terms of a hobby, but I don't think it would have been for me for the work. But I mean, I suppose it depends on the sort of person you are. I mean, it's great having I feel sort of slightly jealous that having a job and something that you're really passionate about be fantastic. But I think I would maybe find it a bit too full on.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's a few good points you touched on there. Having spoken to George and Roy about it as well, they definitely seem like more personalities sort of suited, that their personality seemed a bit more suited to that kind of role. I just didn't really like the fact that you can never really switch off, how you sort of had to be on call 24/7. And is it exactly what you said, like my passion for football actually decreased whilst I was at the job, because you're just part of the club for 24/7. And there's sort of, then you're involved in things that when you look back actually aren't particularly interesting, like you're writing the third article and Joshua Wagnerman's turning his ankle, and you're thinking, yeah, maybe this isn't quite as interesting as I thought it was going to be. And then I found that I was watching less football in my free time, because you're just so involved in it during a day job. But yeah, like you say, it's different strokes for different folks. So when you worked for Get German Football News, was that sort of the first time you'd ever written, or a sort of written?
I would say that, because I'd never really done it at, like, uni and stuff like that. It was obviously something completely different. I think, like, at school and stuff like that, you do English and you get told to write a story, and inevitably half the time I would just write one about football, but probably not up to the right standard. But in terms of, like, serious writing, that's probably the most experience I had. So I'd enjoyed Get German Football News for a while, and then another website, Vevo, I saw them advertising as well, so I decided to join that. I think that was probably the point where I realised that maybe it wasn't a career for me. I think Vevo was a bit more, I don't know, in terms of the content, it's a lot more regular, and they put a lot more pressure on you. You joined, like, a Facebook group, and they were like, right, post, I don't know, the main editor would be posting saying, right, we need like 3 articles today or something like that. And I remember one time it was like, you're right, you all have a challenge this week. You've all to write one article and also recommend a friend to join Vevo. And then when no one replied, they would sort of send a chaser. And I hadn't written an article for them for a few weeks, because, I mean, I had bigger priorities. I was looking for a job and stuff like that. So I hadn't done an article in about 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'm getting messages saying like, oh, like, is everything all right? You've not written anything for a while. It's like, when you're not getting paid for something like that, it feels a bit exploitative almost, and it made me feel like, well, if I'm a journalist and I'm having to do this every week anyway, and then it's becoming too much for me just now, then maybe it's not for me. Yeah. So but sort of not long after that, I just decided to leave Vevo. I think Get German Football News is really good, I think, and I would really recommend that to anybody, for someone that really wants likes football writing as a hobby, but maybe doesn't have, maybe, I don't know, like, they just want to do it when they've got the time, because I've never really felt any pressure to write consistently for them. Every few months is fine. But then you've got someone like Roy, who used it really as a springboard. It's really, he started writing for them, and it's probably helped him get the job at Haas Fylde, because he had that experience as well. So I would say it's quite good in terms of both. It would be good for experience, but if you want it as a hobby and nothing more than that, then it's pretty good as well in terms of that. And I think Halfear is quite similar in that. So just something you can do as and when you can, and with, like, Verigo as an editor, someone that's just only happy to give you that experience, because it's something that's a lot more geared towards people doing it non-professionally, if you know what I mean. Like, I mean, it's a fanzine, it's not like a proper magazine. So I think that's another thing that is good in terms of, if you've just got it as a passion and something to get early experience in terms of writing.
Yeah, exactly, because then you can try it out and see if it is for you. Yeah, shout out to a friend of the podcast, Fergal, doing a great job. Me, Roy, and Georgia carrying on to putting the Halbfear stickers all over Hamburg and the surrounding area. So keep doing your stuff. Can you give us a short teaser on what your next article is going to be on, Colin, or is that still top secret?
I don't think it's been, I don't think Virgo's even teased it yet, but I suppose it doesn't do any harm. Albfia, what's the next issue? Is it 9, 8, 9?
I think so, 9.
Yeah, so it'll be coming out the next month or two, it should be, next couple of months. So I'll be talking about the German football pod trip to Hamburg in October. So me and Andrew travelled across. We did a podcast actually about we were to here a couple of months ago, attending games at Hamburg and Hansa Rostock. So watch out for that, and definitely subscribe to Halbvia. Not just because I'm there; it's just a brilliant read in general for anyone with an interest in German football. And as I say, like if you want to write for it as well, Fergo would only be happy to get more writers on board. Definitely recommend that.
Absolutely. I've just consulted my Halbvia on the bookshelf, and the last one was 8, so you are correct in saying that the next one's 9. But yeah, so that concludes the sort of first part of the podcast, talking about football media and that kind of thing. The second we'll move more on to VfL Bochum 1848 e.V. And yeah, Elliot, I don't know if you want to give us sort of as sort of quickly as you can do a rundown of the history of the club, or any key facts for those people out there wanting to know a bit more about the club.
Yeah, so as you beautifully said in German, founded in 1848. That is when, I mean, quite a few people get contentious about this. That's when the sports institution of the club was founded. So it started off as a tennis and gymnastics, table tennis as well side. But yeah, and then I think 1949, VfL Bochum, the football division side of it, was founded. But yeah, they're back in the Bundesliga after spending 11 years away. But their nickname is the Unrelegatables. They are a historic, traditional mainstay in the Bundesliga. I think they had that nickname because they always stayed up and no one really knew how. Didn't really have much quality in their team, not a lot of money, but just one of those annoying teams that never seemed to get, a bit like Southampton, just never seemed to get relegated. Just always there. So yeah, they've reached the never really won a major trophy. I'm doing a really good sell here. but they've reached the final twice. They reached it in 87, 88, I think. But yeah, the highlight of the club's recent history was the UEFA Cup. They've qualified for that twice in a beautiful rainbow kit, which I'd highly recommend anyone who hasn't seen it to go and Google. However, good luck trying to get your hands on buying one, because they are few and far between. I've been trying for the past 4 years. So yeah, qualified 97 and 03-04 for the UEFA Cup. Had good games against Ajax in that as well. Trabzonspor from Turkey. Yeah, they did quite well. I think history of the club, that's about it. And they've, yeah, often yo-yo between the Zweite and the Bundesliga. But one of your proper traditional German football teams who... Yeah, they are part of the fabric.
Yeah, definitely. I read in the summer of 2020, Match Day's The Hidden Story of the Bundesliga, which was in fact given to me a few Christmases before by a family member. But I don't know if either of you have read it, but the cover of the book is very misleading, because there's a picture of, I think it's Lahm, Müller and Schweinsteiger. But the book's actually about Heinz Hüer, who was a player at the start of the Bundesliga in the 60s at Duisburg, I think, and then was Bochum manager, amongst others. And so, yeah, as you say, for sort of someone like me, who's only been interested in German football for the past 5 years or so, I've always seen Bochum as a second division team. And it's interesting to know that, yeah, between 1971 and 1993, they were in the Bundesliga for that whole time. And like you say, it was sort of one of the unrelegatable teams. But yeah, and so perhaps for people who don't know, where actually is Bochum, and sort of a bit more about the rivalry in the Nordrhein-Westfalen?
Yeah, so again, as well as Googling the rainbow shirt, you need to Spotify, YouTube, whatever, listen to Bochum by Herbert Grönemeyer, famous German singer and the opening lyric goes like "Tief im Westen," so deep in the west of Germany. And to be fair, that is where Bochum is, so it's sandwiched in between Dortmund and Gelsenkirchen, where Schalke is. So it's right in the Ruhrpott, not too far from Cologne and Dusseldorf. But yeah, it's a industrial heartland of Germany, and I think, yeah, Robert, you alluded to earlier when you're going through on the train, it's not the most picturesque place. It's a big, yeah, just boiling pot of cities, basically. You've got Essen in there as well, but yeah, they're really old production cities, lots of finished steelworks in Bochum as well, which you'll see a lot of the emblems and what on with the football club. It's sort of a nice nod to its industrial past. So yeah, it's not too far from the borders with the Netherlands, sort of very deep in West Germany and Northern Westphalia.
And I think, Colin, you were thinking of visiting Bochum, was it in 2020, before the pandemic hit? I mean, that's quite a, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, but I think quite a lot of British people sort of stumble over Bochum in a way, because they plan to go to the Ruhrgebiet area on a weekend, because they go to Schalke or Dortmund or one of the bigger teams in quotation marks, and then they think, oh, where do I want to go on the Sunday or the day before the sort of bigger game, and they see the Bochum's nearby as well. Yeah, so Colin, you were thinking about going to Bochum but didn't quite manage to make it.
I was pretty much, I mean, I booked flights. One of my pals that had never been to Germany before or anything like that, he was quite keen to go, so we're going to go to Fortuna Düsseldorf against Augsburg. I sort of picked up a liking from Düsseldorf a couple of times before that I'd been, and then the Sunday game, I think it was the second last game of the season, so one of those weekends where I think the last two games, the Bundesliga and Zweite Bundesliga, all the games at the same time, so all the fixtures were set really early, that the Bundesliga would be on the Saturday, so Düsseldorf Augsburg, and then Bochum against Greuther Fürth the next day, and Bochum was just the natural choice. Just even from the first couple of trips to that sort of area, I'd ticked off so many of the grounds, likes of Köln, Düsseldorf, Leverkusen, Schalke, Gladbach. But
it's amazing how many are in such a close proximity.
I know. I mean, the first weekend I went to Germany, first weekend I went to that area, I went to four in the one weekend.
Yeah.
And obviously on the train, one of them was Paderborn, which may not be the most exciting choice, but on the train through to Paderborn, you just see so many of these cities that you've heard about, including Bochum, and you see the floodlights from the Hauptbahnhof, because that's the thing about the stadium, it's one of the few that's so close to the centre of the city. And if you've been
especially to Leverkusen, yeah, you're on the train, you look to left like, it's the stadium.
Yeah, there's very few of them. Leverkusen's one of the other ones that's like that. But if you've ever been to like Schalke, then you know how far it is to get out. I mean, you have to get the
Schalke's
tram.
A mooch.
Especially when I went to Schalke, it was like a Friday night game, so 8:30 kickoff, and then you're having to get back into the city centre, and the game finished at 10:30, and then you're just, by the time I got back to Düsseldorf, it was like after midnight, and it's just such a trek. But Bochum, it's one of these ones that's walking distance, so it was always one that had appealed to me, and it was one I hadn't been to, so that weekend had planned to go, flights booked and everything, but obviously COVID struck. But it is one I'd like to go to in future, because it's a classic stadium. It's just so, I don't know, like, it's not sanitised at all, like some of the other games. it matches the club quite well in terms of, I don't know, like you're talking about how they're such a working class club, and I think the stadium really matches that, the terracing and everything like that.
For our branding, we say rough around the edges, but you're bang on, it's not sanitised. Although yeah, COVID-19, it is now nice, and you know, they've got all that.
I mean, there's so many, I feel like in so many instances, the stadium matches the club. Like Leverkusen's is very shiny and modern, quite compact. Mm. or a small club.
Somerset Park.
So I don't know. That's what I mean, though. Somerset Park, it's like, I mean, it's barely changed in the last 50 years, but that's because the club are, I don't know. It suits like a lower league Scottish club. But it's the same with Bochum. Like, the stadium matches the club. Like, when we went to Hansa, stadium matched the club.
Steeped in history.
Like, it's got graffiti all over the outside walls. Hands are not Bochum, but it sort of matches what you think of the actual team, and Bochum's the same, I'd say. The floodlights as well.
That's the point I was going to say as well, the floodlights. Elliot, having been to the stadium, having experienced the game there yourself, how would you describe it to someone who hasn't been to the Ruhrstadion?
A proper football experience. I a few weeks ago went to watch Spurs, and any day of the week that the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and any day of the week I choose Bochum. The gritty, packed in. I mean, not the largest stadium, about 26,000 to 27,000 or so, but the atmosphere there is incredible, and we've got our Ostkurve behind the goal where we get quite a few of our ultras groups, and they provide such an incredible atmosphere. And I think Colin, you're bang on. You can sort of like smell the history there. It's had work done, but I mean, 1911 or so, they started playing football at Kastrofa Strasse, which is where the stadium's at, and they've just developed it, but they've managed to keep that character. And it was actually modeled on English grounds, weirdly enough. You're sort of quite compact, four corners, no gap, so it keeps in the noise. That's one of the biggest things for me, what we're saying about quite a travel to get to Schalke's stadium. It's a 15-20 minute walk from the city centre. It's right in the neighbourhood. I mean, you've got houses either side of the stadium. You're right by the Starlight Express as well, which is another reason why Bochum had some fame in the 80s or 90s, whatever. It's right in the heart of the city, and it just makes it all the sweeter, especially on a match day, just the congregation of people flowing in that direction. So anyone who is tempted, I'd 100% recommend it. But what you were saying earlier, the amount of people I've met who were there, who hadn't intended to come to Bochum, they'd been at Köln or Dortmund, and maybe they didn't get tickets for one, or they could squeeze in both the day after. And those fans often stick. They'll go to the bigger grounds. They'll love it and have appreciation for it. But you come to Bochum once and a lot of people come back. We've got a really good retention rate because it is just proper football. And the sponsor, Moritz Fieger, does the tastiest beer as well. And the two go hand in hand so nicely.
Is Fieger a beer from Bochum itself then?
Yep. So it's a family-owned brewery. I've actually got the nice little promotion top this. So it says like, Earth Classic Miteinander. So sort of the nice little promotion top, but family-owned brewery. Again, probably 5-10 minute drive from the stadium. So they sponsor quite a lot of stuff in Bochum, but they're very proud of the beer. It's a very nice pilsner. Very, very palatable.
And I completely agree with you with the stadium experience as well, because that was the first time when I was working in Munster in the summer of 2016. That was my first standing experience. Well, first legal standing experience at a football game. Obviously, stood at a few English games, but that's not really allowed.
Which game?
It was Bochum against Hanover in August 2016. I vaguely remembered that Torodde scored for Bochum, but I looked it up on Wikipedia today, and it turned out he'd moved to Stuttgart already. So, I remember I was very impressed by one player, and having looked at the lineup today, I think it was Thomas Eisfeld who ran the game, and Sebastian Meyer.
He's just signed for Rot-Weiß Essen, actually.
Oh, really?
Sebastian
Meyer for Hanover, who ended up then playing for Bochum, I think, when I was doing my research today.
Yes, that is correct.
And so I went with one of my friends, Elliot from Lancaster, who ended up doing his year abroad in Siegen as well. And sort of a bit of a funny anecdote, took his dad to a game, a Bochum game, in the standing section. And his dad is sort of a Leeds fan, used to English atmospheres. And so took his phone out right behind the ultras and started filming them. And they came over and talked to him and said, can you delete the video and like stop taking videos of us? So it links into what we were talking last week about, if you maybe are in the standing section in Germany, then don't get your phone out and start taking videos. But yeah, so anyway, sorry. So I was at the game in August 2016, beautiful weekend. Got the train from Munster pretty easy. Getting there and just an amazing experience on the standing terraces, because I feel with Bochum as well, a lot of German teams have similar chants, as in sort of the words are different depending on which team you're at. The actual chants themselves are a bit samey, whereas I quite liked in Bochum they had sort of three or four different ones that I hadn't really heard before. There was one that was like Unter auf den Rasen.
Yeah, that's good. Poppen. Oh, it's so good with the drums, everyone bouncing. It just sounds amazing.
Yeah, I remember, don't think... Sorry, go on, Conan.
Sorry, I remember Matt Ford, the journalist, saying Bochum were the club that had suffered the least from the ultras being missing because the chants were still consistent and good. I think particularly, when attendances were relatively high, maybe half capacity, and they're playing against Dortmund, they were just like still consistent chanting and varied chants as well. Whereas a lot of the clubs, I don't know, you listen to like a Bielefeld game or something, and all they shout is like, Bielefeld, Bielefeld, and that's all you hear. But sometimes, I don't know, it's refreshing to hear a fan base that can chant without ultras, because I think a lot of German fans are not used to sort of taking the responsibility because they're so used to all the atmosphere coming from behind the goal.
I'm going to send that clip to Ava, and she's going to give you some really angry messages now. You're going to regret slating Bielefeld.
Perhaps the wrong example to use then. Actually, when I say that, when we're talking about the last topic about the stadiums and stuff, I see Bielefeld and Bochum as really similar clubs, sort of similar sized. The stadiums are quite compact. I know Bielefeld, it's not one I've been to either, but it's another one that's close to the city centre. So I think they're both quite good additions to the top flight.
I'd agree there. I'd agree there.
My criticism there. Maybe I should use another club next time.
No, too fair.
I mean, at least you hear a chant at all. Some clubs don't seem to reduce capacity. It's been complete silence. I've always felt the... one of the biggest disappointments was Köln. I feel like the atmosphere is a lot worse without the ultras. Or at least it seems like that when you see it on TV.
Well, to be fair, yeah, talking about the first experience of ultras, that was mine. My first ever was going on my German exchange watching Köln. I think they played Ireland, who I don't know how they're doing now. I think they've dropped quite a bit. No. But maybe similar to your friend's dad, I just couldn't get my head around that it was legal to have all those fans jumping with beer and to be so synchronized and have someone with a massive megaphone. And I've always had a soft spot for Köln since, but my German exchange, lovely Baldwin Schumacher, most German name ever. he was very upset when I converted to the blue side with VfL. But yeah, I mean, the ultras were amazing when I was there, but can't say. It must be so much harder to coordinate it as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that we talked about when we went to HSV on the weekend when Colin was in Hamburg, how I think that was definitely one of the grounds that really suffered about the ultras, because especially the standing section at HSV is so wide. There's about 15,000 people, I think, in there. And if there's no one coordinating it, because the ultras usually have sort of three carpos at the front coordinating the singing. If no one's there, then there was like one chant was starting at one side of the singing section, another was starting another. And then we were hit on the head with beer, but we'll move on from that. So Elliot, did you actually live in Bochum on your year abroad? Can you tell us about how much, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but how much the club means to the people of the city and sort of how everyone is so passionate about the club in the city?
Yeah, so I lived at the campus on, so with Royal Uni, so it was in a little town called Kvirenberg, which was about 20 minutes from the city centre on the U-Bahn. I mean, yeah, you know straight away. I mean, the uni and the football club do a lot of work together, so everyone was really impressed there that I was working for them. But on a match day, you go through and, I mean, they've got all the balloons blue, all the posters are out. You get such a feeling of importance with the football club, and yeah, it's quite different to over here, because the build-up for it as well, often in England you've got the match day, everyone just comes out for that day and goes home, whereas you see shirts knocking around the night before or a couple of days before, the pubs start getting busier, more bluer and blue. So that is amazing to see. And I also joined a local football team, and there after every training session, incredibly social, there's always beers and going for a nice little, obviously different, really different style of drinking. They'll just literally have two beers and go home. Whereas I feel like over here, the English can't social drink as well without taking it too far, but that's a different point. But yeah, so I've got a couple of beers, but the only thing they want to talk about is Farfel, who should be in the lineup, who should be doing what. They'll always ask me to try and get a detail of the starting lineup, and I knew as much as them he was going to start, so I was no use whatsoever. But I hope, yeah, people find out when they go there themselves that the football club depends on the city, and when Bochum does well, the whole city does well. It's a great place. Sorry, I mean grey, not great. Like, quite a few of the old industry left after the mines closed, so it is the heart and soul of the football club, and you can just see the joy that it brings to people. It is beautiful.
I was wondering, obviously, Vattenscheid there within the city as well. I know they had financial troubles. Do they have much of an impact in the city?
You don't often see Vattenscheid fans around whatsoever, and there's a historic, fierce rivalry between Bochum and Vattenscheid, actually. I mean, they're Bochum, Farfel, so BVB, Farfel's a big rivalry, but when Vattenscheid were doing well, it was huge. However, yeah, since the financial troubles have come, the rivalries drop down a lot, and you have had a few more Bochum fans going and supporting the club and watching them and trying to make sure they don't go out of business, because it is nice. They'll put the rivalry aside and they like having, yeah, I mean, because yeah, Vattenscheid's only, you take the train out, it's like the first or second stop, it is really close to the city. And they've also, I don't know if he's still there, but they had Peter Neuder, who was one of Farfel's legendary coaches. Hilarious bloke, if you YouTube him. He's like dancing when we survive relegation and a really eccentric geezer. I think he was their director of football, and I don't know if he's still involved there or not, but his appointment as well really saw more Bochum fans sort of chip in and try and help the club. But I'm not sure how they're doing. Are they still in the red financially? I thought they were slowly.
I thought they didn't exist anymore. I thought they'd like completely been disbanded.
I think they did they get demoted?
I think they're playing in some capacity, aren't they?
I'm just
going to be embarrassing if not.
They are playing. Yeah, they got demoted to the Oberliga. They're in the Oberliga because they were in the Regionalliga maybe a couple of seasons ago, but I remember eventually just all their fixtures pretty much got annulled and they were demoted for the rest of the season. Demoted the following season. So they're third in the Oberliga, so bouncing back.
Okay, well, you talk about traditional, historic clubs and Vattenscheid are, they're huge. Leroy Sane used to play for them, I think.
That's what I was going to say, because that's what I remembered seeing on the news, was that he donated a lot of money to help them survive. But yeah, so maybe that could be a hidden tip for people who are thinking of going on a trip to the Rhine at some point once the pandemic's over, is the Vattenscheid, because I'm pretty sure they have a sort of nice old traditional stadium.
Really cool stadium, really cool.
So there we go, that's the GFP tip of the week. The last point on this part of the podcast was something I was quite surprised about when I did my research for the podcast as well. Some people might be surprised that we do research for the podcast, but it does happen. Was the part of the talent schmiede for Bochum. The amount of players that have come through is pretty incredible. So Stefan Kuntz, Joel Matip. Mm-hmm. One I didn't know was Ilkay Gundogan, was actually from Bochum, yeah. And not from Dortmund. Christoph Kramer and Leon Goretzka. So yeah, I don't know, Elliot, if that's something that the club's particularly proud of as well.
Yeah, 100%. We don't have any large financial benefactor to the club. It's like obviously the German model, fans own the majority of it and really fight for it. They get sponsorships and whatnot. So yeah, it's the Talentwerk Academy, and yeah, especially with Leon Goretzka, they're so proud of him, and he is we call them Bochumer Jungers, so like your Bochum boys, Bochum lads, and he's still blue in his heart, and not for Schalke, but they've just forgiven him for that move. He comes back and watches occasionally, and the club are really proud of the talent that they come through. And yeah, Joel Matip, when he won the Champions League, they were sort of tweeting congratulations to him, and it's impressive the amount of players that come through, and obviously the majority of them go down to play the Little Liga or what on, but the ones who've come through, Gundogan as well, is really impressive. And there is a huge emphasis on that going forward, because I mean, you look at their transfers in years gone by, it's rare that they'll pay money for people. A lot of players coming in on free. And then, I mean, looking the other way, we've got Arma Belakotchap, who's just come through the academy and could be the next one to be sold on for who knows what. But yeah, it is really important. And just going back to the connection with the fans, that really resonates with them. When they see one of their own come through, they love it. And so, I mean, the average football fan should as well.
So we've talked about the history of Bochum. And as Elliot mentioned earlier, at the end of last season, Bochum were promoted from the Zweite Bundesliga for the first time since the 2009-10 season. Colin, what would you say has been the reason behind their success this season? Because I think most observers would say that they've surpassed expectations this season so far.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult for them at first. I would say first five games, four defeats. But I think since then, they've definitely learned to play to their strengths. And that's important in terms of promoted sides when they go up. They're really built from a strong defensive record. Only 29 conceded, which is particularly strong defensively compared to the other sides near the bottom. And they've been particularly strong at home as well, which has definitely been a key factor. Really, I think Riemann has been very impressive as a goalkeeper who's never been in the top flight before, but I think he encapsulates a lot of the sort of gritty sides of the club. He sort of represents them pretty well. Bit of a cult hero, definitely strengthened by his Pokal exploits, taking the final penalty against Augsburg. But just that even going forward, though, they've used the different weapons that they've got. Gerrit Holtmann, his pace, obviously, is one of the obvious examples. Used him, and just emergence of players like Pantovic as well, who scores from midfield. Just a lot of these unfancied players that you would previously have seen as second tier players, but perhaps playing above their abilities so far. And I wouldn't say they're safe at this point, but if they continue the way they're going, I reckon they should stay clear of relegation trouble this season, at least.
And how much of that is down to Thomas Reis, do you think, Elliot? Obviously a former player, former club player and academy coach, who was part of the same DFB Lehrgang as Stefan Baumgart, who they met on Saturday.
They did. They're very, very chummy. Big little bromance there. It's nice. I think massively. Prior to Thomas Reis under Robin Dutt, perhaps there was a better quality-wise squad in a Zweite Liga, but he's turned it around with, I mean, I don't know last season if many people would have expected VfL to go up, and even this season in the Bundesliga without having made two impressive signings, I think he's working wonders, to be honest with you. And I don't think you should undersell the effect he's had. Clearly, as you said, knows the club inside out, incredibly well respected. And yeah, they're playing his style of way. Important to capitalise at home, which we have done. And the sooner fans are back there, the better for that, because they really help energise the club and bring them forward. And yeah, it is definitely down to Thomas Rice. I think if there is one thing he would change, it's more goals. That's something that VfL have struggled with. But yeah, with the new signing, Jürgen Lokadia from Brighton, he adds a new element up front. And I think we're all optimistic for the second half of the season to come. And I mean, would you have said 11th place? Would you take it at the start of the season, halfway through? Everyone would have said yes. However, I mean, as we'll touch on, it is tight down there.
And something we were talking about earlier was the academy as well. And you were talking about Ahmed Belakotchap. Looking more at sort of the medium term, do you think it's how important is it for the club to keep those talents? Because someone like him, he's more likely to stay at a club now they're in the Bundesliga. Do you think that could be a real weapon for the club over the next 5 years or so?
Yeah, 100%. I just think it sort of highlights the importance of staying in the Bundesliga as long as VfL remain up. There's a good chance of keeping Garmel at the club. I know there was interest when we were in the Zweite, and your bargaining position is immediately much stronger in the top league, and even attracting players to the club. I mean, just a different type of caliber player who's involved, you've seen, has gone up. But I mean, even your likes of Erhan Masovic, and obviously we touched on Pantovic as well. There've been players who have surprised a lot. I mean, obviously at the club, we knew the quality was there, but we've been surprised in how successful they've been in the Bundesliga. I mean, I don't know if you caught much of the game against Dortmund. Masovic had Haaland in his back pocket, and it's amazing when you look on paper that it should have been a ridiculous matchup, but the combinations he's had at the back have worked, and credit where it's due. Thomas Rice has got a really, really well-organised side, which, I mean, don't concede. You're down for a point and then just nick a goal, which has been the tactic so far, and it's worked well. So touch wood that remains.
And how do you see Bochum developing over the next few years, Colin? Do you think they'll establish themselves in the Bundesliga or continue to be what they call in German a Fahrstuhlmannschaft, or a lift team, one that goes up and down between the divisions? Sorry, I realize in this section I've dropped a lot of German words, but yeah.
I know what it means. Sorry. I've actually made the notes elevator club or my notes in front of me. I neglected to mention that earlier, but I was actually going to use the term Fahrstuhlmannschaft and impress you, but that's gone now. You've decided to do that to me. In terms of the question, I think it's hard for a club like that to establish themselves in the long term. I think just it's so difficult. The jump between the second and first tiers so big, and the in terms of the gulf and finances, it's just so hard for clubs coming up to really consolidate themselves. You've seen even Stuttgart, who are a team you would say much bigger than Bochum and more resources, struggling in their second season, facing a relegation battle after doing so well last year. And then previous years, like Fortuna Düsseldorf, finished 10th coming up and then relegated the following season. So there's no guarantees after a strong first year. It's probably even harder to keep that up the second year. Certain clubs have done that. Union have done that. Bielefeld seem to be coming into their own in the middle of the season. Could well stay up again, really against the odds, to be honest. So I would say, if I was to make a prediction, I think they'll end up back in the Zweite Liga, which is probably the natural level of the club, I would say. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's not a disaster for them to go down, but I just think the way the squad that they've got are playing above expectations at the moment, and I don't really see them having the finances to improve upon it. So I would say it's only a temporary period.
I think you could draw comparisons though to the way that Union have been, and yeah, okay, potentially they've spent a tiny bit more, but not drastically. And I think it goes hand in hand with being strong at home and having that incredible support, which genuinely can, for some reason, it can have a huge role. And I mean, you don't want to go and play Union at home, and at the moment, you don't want to go and play Bochum at home. And I think as long as that continues and the belief in the team is there, we can keep punching above our weight.
There's definitely parallels, like the home form, strong defensive record. I just think when people talk about low budget in terms of Union, there's definitely a difference. They've got players like Cruiser, they've got players like Knocker, they must have poured money into it. They can't get a player like Cruiser. I mean, other sort of competing sides like Werder Bremen were trying to get him that summer. Union managed to get them, so they must be offering some sort of wages. I don't really see Bochum bringing in a name like that. I don't think they've got the finances.
And I think something we've seen, I don't know if Elliot will like this, but at least in my time following Bochum, they seem to enjoy shooting themselves in the foot when things are going well as well. And so my opinion would be that a lot of the success is down to Rice. And you feel like if he is tempted away by another team in the area and to bring in Robin Dutt again, then things start might going downhill. So
it's the joy of having a coach who knows the club and loves the club and understands the importance of it to a city. So, I mean, the connection there is a lot stronger than... I fully get your point with a manager as well. You're scared he's going to get poached, but just the connection playing for the club and coaching the youth team is a good, really beautiful anchoring force that should be in our favour. But no, there's at home to Bayern Munich in February, which would be quite good as well. Because obviously there's a touch there with because there's English friendship with Leicester, but there's also a friendship with Bayern Munich, which dates back to the 80s or so when, yes, it's a long story, but I think a bunch of Bayern Munich fans were attacked in a bar by Bochum fans and then everyone clubbed together and no, but I think they protected them afterwards and made a big thing about it and really like embraced them and defended them. Or it could have been, I think I've told that story completely wrong. It could have been a Dortmund fan. I need to check the story. But there is a beautiful friendship between the two
looked
clubs.
Looked up the story. I think it was Bochum fans attacked Bayern supporters and they were protected by the Bochum or Jungen, a fan group. And it was
I was half 90. Right.
1973, and a friendship has remained since.
It's stuck, and there is genuine. Yeah, I mean, I think it plays into it as well because you've got Dortmund nearby, who everyone in Bochum wishes do terribly. So it's supporting the other team, but you'll definitely notice it. We've played them in the Pokal a few times, especially 2 years ago, and there was a lot of love between the two sets of supporters. So hopefully, I mean, 12th of February, probably it'll be 750 fans again. But watch out for the beautiful half and half scarves.
Well, thank you very much, Colin, for clearing that story up. And I think we'll end it there. Thanks very much to Elliot for coming on. Have you got any parting words other than to obviously follow Bochum on Twitter? Wait, do you do Facebook as well? Or is it just a Twitter account?
Oh no, I can only handle the one at once. So just Twitter at Firefall Bochum 1848 _AN. Drop us a follow and thank you very much for having me.
And Colin, I think you had some parting words as well.
I meant to say this in my intro, but I was just going to say I think it's very fitting on Burns Week that we've got not only myself, an honest man, on the panel, but we've got Bob Haggis hosting.
And
so it's very, very fit.
Yeah, on that note, I'd also like to apologise to any Scottish people out there for me butchering the name of the podcast at the beginning as well. So we'll have to see what the gang thought of me hosting. But yeah, thanks very much to Elliot and Colin for joining me. And there's no Bundesliga and Zweite Bundesliga at the weekend, unfortunately. But I'm not quite sure when the next episode will be, but hopefully join us then.